Well, it's deceptive, obviously, because of what we're confronted with as far as COVID-19 is concerned in the world. But it's another beautiful morning here in Qatar at the end of, I think, our third week, Andy, of Keys and Gray Unplugged. Mm. But it doesn't get much better than this, does it?
No, it's beautiful, Richard. It's, you know, in normal circumstances, I'd be stood here or be sitting here having a cup of tea in the morning, catching up with what's going on in the world newspaper-wise, having a little read, overlooking this beautiful flat, calm blue sea there, and thinking, yeah, well, I haven't done bad. But it's not normal.
Stay safe, stay at a distance. Please respect the various governmental regulations as far as COVID-19 is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in our part of the world, be in, or rather stay in with be in. I think that's it.
You get that right. I got that. Stay in with be in and be one.
Very good. And thank you, by the way, for your thoughts and comments about the programme from all over the world. Very much appreciated. Newcastle played such negative football then. It was unbelievable. Quote, from whom? A former Newcastle manager has been on this programme.
What, this particular
very
series?
Good, yes.
Oh, it has to be Big Sam.
Correct. Big Sam takes a swipe at Benitez's time at the club and urges the Magpies to stick with Steve Bruce once the £300 million takeover is completed. It's the once that slightly bothers me.
Additionally, do you know, talking about Newcastle, and can I for a second? Because there's quite a few Newcastle fans have enjoyed jousting with you over the past couple
of
years.
That's fair.
And you've had much to say about Newcastle over the past few years, particularly pre-Bruce. During a Benitez reign.
It started, Andy, I'll tell you where it started for me. It started with I just tired of the constant drivel that Benitez would come out with. All I said at the time was, look, put up or shut up.
Like what? Drivel like what? What do you mean?
All the constant chiding of Ashley and the complaints about not having enough money. And look, he had plenty of money. He got Newcastle United out of the Championship. Here you go. You got me going.
He got Newcastle out of the Championship with
the biggest budget any team has come back with. And having spent the best part of £100 million or more. And did great, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But the ambition of the owner is a little different, as Benitez proved when he went and worked in China. Ashley didn't want to own a Chinese football club.
No.
I just tired of that. If you don't want the job, go and get another one.
Uh-huh.
Bruce has proven that Benitez was not the only man that could manage Newcastle United. We've had some great times in that part of the world.
Oh, unbelievable.
Wynyard Hall on a Saturday night.
St John Hall reign was amazing. As you dubbed them many years ago, the entertainers.
It was a wonderful place to go. We'd have dinner on a Saturday night with St John and Kevin would come. And we'd enjoy Sunday.
So you don't think it can be that again? Surely it's still the same place? Still the same people?
Look, the one person who said nothing about this prospective takeover is the owner.
Mike Ashley?
Nothing. Uh-huh. He does not like Amanda Staveley. I know that. He thinks she's a self-publicist.
Right.
Now, I think the last two or three days have supported that view. I wouldn't be surprised if there was a surprise yet.
Why then do you think that if Mike's stalling? Because it seems to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to me that for the last 4 or 5 years, Richard, that Mike Ashley has pretty much said to me, looking on the outside, if I get a decent offer for this club, I'm off.
Yes, but I think he has a figure that he believes it to be worth. And I can't believe that the Saudi Sovereign Fund are arguing at the moment between 3 and 320, if that's all it is, an extra 20 million to get this deal done. It just doesn't feel right to me.
Right.
Despite the suggestion that I know Mike Ashley well, I don't. I shared a taxi with him once to the airport.
Right.
And
so what do you see?
Let me just tell you the story. He was very keen then. He made the point at that time. He shrugged his shoulders and he said, I suppose I'll have to give Shearer a go at some point. Before Alan got the job. Took the plane back to Luton Airport with him, his plane, which was very kind of him to offer the lift back. You were driving because you only lived in the Midlands. But that's the only time I met him. I had a call from Chris Mort, who was then the chairman, immediately afterwards. Panicking, anything Mike said, you mustn't say anything. It's all very much under us, which of course was an encouragement to go and tell somebody. That's what I realised. So I told Alan.
Well, you are a journalist.
Of course. So I told Alan, who would have had his own sources anyway, but it confirmed, I think, what Alan wanted to know. I think Mike Ashley was quite pleased Alan failed.
No.
I think he was quite pleased. I think it allowed him to give Alan the job.
Right.
And he then got his club back in double quick time.
Oh, he did, eh?
In double quick time. Mm. I remember having conversations with Alan at the time after they'd gone down. And plainly there was a problem about, well, Alan's terms.
Mm-hmm.
And Mike Ashley felt Alan was going to be an expensive championship manager. I said to Alan, look, just do it. Go public. You don't need the money. It's your club, right? Do the job. And when you get them back, which you will, somebody will get that squad out of that league. When you get them back, just say to Mike, right, what's it worth?
What's
to
the
you
deal?
Yeah. You make, I mean, he was a hero in Newcastle, but I said, you make up for the disappointment of the 8 games. Just do the job.
Mm.
He didn't get the job, as we know, and the two of them have had a standoff ever since. But I Mike runs the football club his way. That's
yes,
his right.
That is
He's
right.
The owner of the club, Andy, uh-huh. So he can run it how he sees fit.
Yeah, get that.
Chris Hughton subsequently got them back. We know that they've been down a couple of times since. What is a realistic ambition for Newcastle under this current ownership? Top half, a cup run, mm-hmm. maybe?
I was just about to say 10th.
Problem is, all the bonuses at Newcastle are based on finishing 10th. So up until Brucey, every manager has wanted to finish top half for their own good reason.
Mm. So they're not bothered about the cups?
Steve has said, I want to win something. Mm. He's a Geordie.
Yeah, he's a Geordie.
I would have thought Geordies would embrace that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just another story comes to mind, another mad evening at Newcastle when we were sitting presenting a game before the Rooney transfer. And I'm presenting the hour's build-up and my uh-huh. phone keeps ringing in the breaks. Paul Stretford, Newcastle have just offered 20 million for Rooney. What? 20 million? I said, well, can I use that? Yeah, of course. Right, great.
Really?
Yeah.
And did you?
Yes, yeah. Of course. So you come back off the break, 20 million. Breaking news, Manchester United offer 24 million for Rooney. All right, next break, telephone rings. Newcastle have offered 25. Here we go. Of course, Rooney was representing Rooney. Stretford was very good friends with then
mm-hmm.
chairman Freddie Shepherd. Mm-hmm. And as agent to Wayne Rooney, it suited him, didn't it, to keep the auction.
Yeah. Listen, always better two in the ballpark than one.
That was great. And I'm just sitting getting very excited, very naively thinking, oh, this is good, breaking news. Newcastle have offered another five. Always something happening in Newcastle. Well, there still is.
Right, one question about Newcastle, the final one for you then. Because I get the impression, and again, you've had more to do with the supporters up there over the years. I get the impression there's a lot of Newcastle supporters think that as soon as Mike Ashley goes, that's a problem solved.
Yes.
Would that be fair?
Yes.
And do you?
Well, I genuinely have no idea. I think there is... an attempt by this consortium to buy the club.
Mm-hmm.
I think Mike Ashley is disappointed, is putting it mildly, that the bid has become public knowledge. Somebody at some point has then got to decide whether Mohammed bin Salman is a fit and proper person to own a Premier League football club, and that's not a decision you and I will be making or having to get anywhere near.
No.
But I still am of the opinion that this is not a done deal, and that return to that phrase, I wouldn't be surprised if there's still a surprise. Look, if this deal went through, Newcastle fans have got every reason to be excited.
Yes.
There's an awful lot of money there. But I don't think that removing Ashley necessarily is the answer to the frustration those Geordies feel.
Yeah, well, if it goes through, it will be interesting to see if Brucey survives, I have to say. I just have a feeling, Richard, just one a little bit on that, I just have a feeling if insanely rich owner is taking over at Newcastle, they will have their own ideas about who they want to be their coach. A bit like Big Sam when he went to Blackburn. Was it Blackburn?
And Newcastle.
Owners came in. What did they do? Yeah, we're okay for now. Owners go in. As soon as they get there, right, thank you very much, Sam.
Mm.
You know, but we want our own man there. And that's fine. And I think Steve Bruce would get that. If the club is sold, if new owners come in, then Steve would understand, I think, being the football man he is, if they want their own man in. That's my only worry.
Very
for
much
Steve.
So. Yes, I would concur. Max Allegri is... Max Allegri? Yeah. His name has been mentioned as well. Listen, thoughts, prayers, and every good wish from us, everybody at BN Sports, the football world, to Norman Hunter, still battling for his life.
Quick story on Norman. Can I give you one?
Yeah.
I'm 17... No, 16... I haven't joined a professional club yet. I'm playing for Scotland under 18s against Leeds United at Hampden in a friendly for them. And I'm only a baby. No, I think I was like 17 or something like that. And I'm playing against Norman Hunter. And I'm petrified. bite your legs is marking me. So the ball got played up to me, Richard. And Hamden in those days had a few bumps and bubbles on it. And I was nervous, and the ball comes up to me. Norman's right behind me. So I go to control it. I said, I'll control this and knock it off. So I go to control it, and it sits up and hits the top of my foot. And because there's pace on the ball, it loops up and goes over Norman's head. Because I was young and bright, I spun past Norman, got the ball and had a shot. And the goalkeeper's break, Gary Sprakes made a great save. And he's come up to me. I can't use the language he told me. Words to effect were, if you do that again, I'm going to snap you in two. And I remember going, I didn't mean it, Norman. I didn't mean it.
Sorry.
So I didn't mean it. And that's a true story. I'll never forget that, but Norman.
He joined us a couple of times in the early days, but my favourite memory of Norman on the television was 1991. The year that Leeds won the title. Mm-hmm. We had a programme called The Footballers Football Show.
That's right.
And we did a tribute to Manchester United a week too soon. But they were winning it then, if you remember, before that dramatic collapse at the end of the season. So I think Dennis Law, George Best, Paddy Craeran sat, talked, a whole lot of memories. Wonderful, wonderful to share thoughts even at that time
top
of what had previously
been
at United. The problem was that 7 days later, Leeds United were going to win the title, so we followed up with a tribute to Leeds United with Billy Bremner, Johnny Giles and Norman Hunter. Billy and Johnny were a little difficult to engage in conversation.
Oh, yeah.
I remember saying to Billy at one point, I was desperate to go somewhere. I said, well, you know, you look at the current side, they're such a good team. David Batty in there wearing your shirt, Billy. You know, a little bit, and Johnny went, not fit to lace Billy's boots. No. Norman was.
I'm kind of guessing those three said nobody in that team.
Norman was the only. Norman was fantastic. Norman understood that it was a difficult hour that was in front of me, and was really, really helpful.
We wish
him well. Mm. Daniel Levy's asked Maurizio Pochettino to take a cut on his £8.5 million owed by Tottenham.
Can I just ask about Daniel? Would it not be in Daniel's interest to that £3 million he was just granted, what, 2 weeks ago?
Yes, his performance bonus.
Why didn't he just defer that?
Why didn't he not take it?
Exactly. Why not?
He doesn't need it.
Why not?
He just doesn't. Oh, Martin Samuel from the Mail today, thinking a little bit like I am. Headline here, Toon takeover is ringing the loudest of alarm bells. He's really saying what I am, that there's been nothing at all from Mike Ashley. He also is of the same opinion as us, that Graham Souness picked the wrong battleground to have a go at Paul Pogba with. pointing out here, Andy, Souness won 5 English League titles, but Pogba has won Serie A 4 times. Souness won 6 domestic cups in England, 1 in Italy, and the League and League Cup in Scotland. Pogba has won 5 domestic cups across Italy and England. Pogba's only European trophy is the Europa League, granted, paling into insignificance alongside 3 European Cups. But Pogba has also won the World Cup at under 20 level and the big one.
Yeah, the only defence I would make of Graham on the international one is Graham's Scottish, not French. And he's got much more chance of winning something with the French team than you have with the Scottish national side.
You Scots have had down the years players capable, I think, of achieving international success, not with your eyes shut, but with a little bit of effort, thought, construction, better than Ali McLeod's build-up.
Well,
come on, Andy.
No, come on. Come on, what?
Souness.
No, I know.
Bremner.
I know what you're going to say. Yes.
Law.
No, listen.
Jordan.
What I'm saying
Gray.
Is, what I'm
Dalglish.
Saying, what I'm saying.
Riot.
Hansen.
Cooper.
Cooper. No,
Hansen.
What I'm saying is, yes, if you took, say, aside from the mid to late 70s, right, had a collection of those players that you mentioned.
Magnificent.
And many
players.
Others. McLeish, Miller.
Miller.
Yeah, all that. Hansen.
Jardine.
You know, if you took a collection of those players now and put them in the modern game.
The two greys.
Right, with the modern thought process and everything. Then, yes, there's undoubtedly Scotland, I think, could go far. We didn't. That was just the way we were. We played football.
Why was
because we
like
loved
that?
It. I don't know.
You do.
I don't.
Yes, you do.
I don't.
There was a deep divide between the Scottish Scots and the Anglo Scots.
Oh, there was at times.
And there was a huge divide between
Rangers and Celtic.
Yeah. So you'd got 4 cliques in the dressing room.
Well, there weren't. I mean, to be honest with you, when I played for Scotland, I never found too many cliques around. I really didn't. I got on pretty much well with everybody.
But you always do. That's,
but there
that,
was a, there was a, there was an occasion. There were occasions when, you know, there was a time when they wanted an all tartan Scottish 11. The fans were demanding an all tartan Scottish 11, and that would have meant people like me, Souness, Dalglish, Hansen, and numerous others that played for Manchester United that were Scots couldn't get a game. That's what they were wanting, but it, thankfully that never happened.
Two more pieces from the Mail. Ian Ladyman, making sure the kids are all right. Manchester United at the moment are making a good deal of effort of talking to youngsters, engaging on Zoom with okay. Michael Carrick, with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
What, their own young players?
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that, and if not today, if we ran out of time, which is something that seems to happen a lot. And also, Martin Samuel again, proper leaders wouldn't allow this to happen. Captains, still the standoff between players and management at football clubs. Mm-hmm. There's a meeting today, Friday, of course, to discuss going forward. But it seems to me that these days we do lack genuine captains at football mm-hmm. clubs. And if that's a necessity in the modern era or not, I don't know. But again, I'll come back mm-hmm. to you on that. What else have we got here? Henry Winter in the Times today, why top clubs will want to be the next Brentford. This is an area I know that you you don't necessarily enjoy talking about nor embracing. Money balls.
Oh yeah. Listen, whatever fits.
Alan Hudson, the great mm-hmm. Alan Hudson, talking in the Times today. Coaching is a myth, he says. The likes of Pep are blown up to be something that they're not.
Oh, dear.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with that, Alan, but the point he makes in the article I do have some sympathy with, which is that he says here, these are frightening times. He says, obviously, we all concur with that. When I go to the shop, you don't hear anyone laughing now. And he makes the same point about footballers. He said, football needs to change when it comes back. When was the last time you saw a player smile? Well, you've said that.
There's a lot. There's a few there, but I've said there's too many. These days, you wouldn't know if you look at their face whether they're winning 3-0 or getting beaten 3-0. I do think it's different. Now, listen, it doesn't mean to say it's wrong. It's just it's different. It's very much a different game to the one that Alan played in and I played in and many others. And even the beginning of the Premier League. Listen, I'm not... People think that, Richard, when people like me talk about football, it's just... It's way back then. It's not. I'm talking about when the beginning of the Premier League,
when
it started.
You mean when football really started?
You know, like Kevin Keegan's entertainers.
Sorry, let me run that past you again. You mean when football... really started?
No, it started way back in 1800s. Really it did, although people don't believe that it did. But what I'm saying is, we had Kevin Keegan's entertainers, we had the great sides at Fergie built in the early 1990s,
well, all of them,
to 2000, yeah, plus, you know, the wonderful entertainment and fun that was there. I watched one last night. I was sitting there on YouTube and I thought, oh, and I was just about to go to bed and I thought, oh, just have a skit, and I saw Arsenal Manchester United at Highbury.
Vieira, Keane.
Not that one, no. But it was a near.
Lee Sharp when they battled 4-2.
No, it was 2-1 United,
right?
And it was
two from Keane.
Remember that? United had gone one up. A very young Freddie Ljungberg and a very young Arsene Wenger and a very young Fergie, and I'm watching that game played at a pace. I'm watching Keane and Vieira put their heads into each other, grab each other by the throat. And the commentator saying, ooh, he might get booked for that. And that's even then. Whereas now both would have been sent off.
Yes.
What is right? But then Keno got the better of everybody because he ended up scoring both goals in a 2-1 win. And I sat there and I looked at that and I saw the difference, the cut of attitudes. And this is, we're talking David Beckham, we're talking Ryan Giggs, we're talking Thierry Henry. All these players that are very much part of the modern game, as we like to call it. But their attitudes just are refreshing for me.
Well, let me. We've got time to do one of these two. We'll come back to the other next. I think we've got plenty of time, Andy, to discuss many different things going forward. But you just mentioned Keane and Vieira. So to go back to what Martin's saying today, proper leaders. Mm-hmm. Where have they gone?
I don't know. And now, thinking off the top of my head, proper leaders. Where have they gone? In that era you're talking about. The coaches, my manager, I say Howard Kendall, right?
Yeah, I wasn't thinking of going back that far.
No, I'm talking about Wenger. I'm talking about Fergie. Fergie wanted, and Wenger wanted, and the managers then, in those days, wanted people on the pitch to make decisions, to have responsibility. Yeah?
Yes.
What was the word Sean Dyche used the other day? It wasn't responsibility. He says, I give my players...
I know what you're saying, and I can't think of the word.
I can't think of the word, but he gives these players,
in effect,
authority to do something on the pitch, to do what they want. And I think a lot of the modern day coaches want to control everything. Everything. They want to make every decision. I think a lot of the reason why they write things down on the pieces of paper every time something happens, every 2 minutes, they're writing something, Whereas I think Fergie's, Wenger, others of that era, Kevin Keegan, Kevin, you tell me, Kevin Keegan spent all his time on the touchline pulling players around, coming here. Do you think he did that? I don't remember him doing that. No. I just remember him sending a team out to enjoy football.
That's generally,
to go and play.
Generally with Benitez, mind, only when they've scored, you'll see him on the touchline and give some of that. But
that's what I'm saying. So I think they allowed players. I've always said Roy Keane was Fergie
yes,
on the pitch.
Yes, you have.
Tony Adams, what a captain. Vieira came in and took over from that.
JT,
John Terry, what a captain. Unbelievable, Rich, you go through. You know, even people like, not as vocal as that, but in the early, it's Tottenham skipper, Gary Mabbott. Gary, captain in every sense of the word. Mm-hmm. Didn't batter people.
Who's Everton's captain right now?
I don't know. Who's Man City's?
Well, I'm going to guess Silva, but...
Well, this is what I'm saying. Who's Arsenal's?
Well, they've got five captains.
But who is he?
Granit Xhaka.
No, Aubameyang. And there you go.
That's the point, isn't it?
The only reason I know that is I read Martin Samuel's piece this morning. and he used Aubameyang as a captain.
Yeah.
As a captain who says, well, do you think he's worried?
No, Aubameyang's not a leader.
I'll tell you
one
from
captain.
The old school. It's funny that. Mark Noble, one of your favourites.
Oh, top class.
There's a captain.
Top class.
Now, do you think he's a captain?
I'll give you another one. Two of my current favourite players, three, and they'd be in my starting lineup every time. James Milner, proper bloke.
But he's not a captain.
Maybe not a captain, but he's solid,
yes.
And you would follow him.
7 out of 10 every week.
Troy Deeney,
captain.
Warrior.
He's a captain.
Troy Deeney,
he's a captain. There's another one. He's a captain.
Mark Noble.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. But it seems to me that the higher up the ladder you go now, the more the coaches want to
so captains
control.
Are more technical.
Yes.
Than they were.
I'm going down the league here in my mind.
Physical.
I'm trying to think of when we'll come into the first genuine.
Is that a reflection of the
Jordan
way the
Henderson,
game has changed?
Jordan Henderson's reputation probably has enhanced this season more than any.
Agreed,
right?
But he has had a magnificent. He would have been my player of the year.
But what I'm saying is, yeah, I wouldn't argue with that. I would not argue with that. I think Jordan's been magnificent. But what he has done, he's led his team, Richard.
Mm.
He's been on the pitch exactly what Klopp wanted. That kind of captain, vocal, in your face. If he had to get involved in a scrap, he was getting involved in a scrap. If he was arguing with the referee, he was arguing with the referee.
Mm.
That's what he is, and he's grown into that. And I think he said his best season he's ever had this year, Jordan Henderson. And I think you're right. I think if the PFA doesn't get... And we say, oh, can I quite show off at a tangent?
Mm.
The PFA, you said he would have been your player of the year.
Yes.
How are the PFA saying... We can't have a PFA Player of the Year because we can't send out ballot papers.
Well, that,
what
that's,
world do we live in? Do we not live in a...
I agree. I mean...
A world we can all vote online?
Send it to me here or...
Exactly. Yeah. So how ridiculous is that? Anyway, that was another thing. But you're right. I think you're right about captains. I think Martin Samuel's right about captains. Not too much, but leaders. People you look up to. People other players will sit in the dressing room and go... I'll listen to him.
See, how many times have we sat recently on a Monday night and you have pointed out to me, following the concession of a goal, and as you've always said, there's always 10 reasons why somebody concedes.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally you just have to go, wow, brilliant, love mm-hmm. it. But someone who hasn't done their job at a corner shrugs their shoulders and walks back for a kickoff.
And so does everybody else.
Yes, and it irritates you because time and again you'd have said, hey, I'd have been in his face. Do you mind? You know, that was your job, but nobody says anything.
No. It's very quiet now. They are. It's almost like this holistic approach that a lot of coaches want now. Don't upset anyone. I've heard various stories of the modern game, Richard, where certain coaches at half-time will not allow players to raise their voices if things are going wrong. It has to be calm and controlled. Why? Sorry. If I'm getting beat 3-0, And somebody in my team, I said, an absolute nightmare, and he hasn't done his job that he should have done, and he's cost us two of those three goals. I think I'm telling my half-time that a bit better might be needed in the second half.
Can I just add, if you're getting beat 3-0, you're coming off. Come and sit with me.
You're my fault. 45. I never got a kick. I was up there available. Yeah. Nobody used
me. You were never one of those. Well, but we were 2-1 up when I came off.
You know, a lot of it's changed like that, and I do get that. But, you know, it's a sport. I've said to you, it's got the full spectrum of emotion from there to there. Right across it. And that's why you have, and I think they need all to be involved.
Do you think, and we've had 3 weeks without even mentioning it, the addition of VAR has turned our sport into something that is too mechanical these days, too structured, too goal, wait, check, cue celebration?
Okay, I've always believed the difference between our sport and any other sport, I try to think, is it flows. And from minute one to minute 90, unless there's a serious injury, somebody has to have 2 or 3 minutes of treatment, it flows. The only gaps are when it goes out for a goal kicker or goes out for a throw-in. But it's quickly picked up and you're quickly on the game. So it flows. What we've now punctuated our game with are massive stops, massive lulls. And that affects not only the game, it affects the fans as well.
The irony of what multi-ball in the European competitions is designed to keep the game going quickly, and yet you're right, we have these truncated gaps now.
Too many of them.
Yeah.
And that's why that was the beauty of the game for me. And the beauty of the game as well for me, and I might be wrong, and I'm happy to concede to all the younger generation that if that's the way the game has to go, that the game is better because of all this. I don't think it is.
Can I just point out, there's nothing wrong with age. You cannot buy experience, my friend. So let's not go there. But enjoyed it. Thank you.
Are we finished?
We're done.
I
told you we wouldn't get the time. People keep saying to me, what do you sit there and talk about all day? Well, football.
Yeah, football. It takes up a lot of your
time.
What's
wrong with that?
Not a lot. Not a lot wrong with that. I can't think of anything. Yeah. That's a good week.
We're here on Be In Sports, same time as you found us today, 5 days a week. Stay in with Be In,
and we, stay safe.
I hope, are part of that process. I concur with my colleague, stay safe and look after yourselves.